Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with two filmmakers, Victoria Stone and Mark Diebel, and we met at the Intercontinental Hotel in Toronto. We're in the basement. It was the Toronto International Film Festival was going on at the time, and so it could be a little noisy in the background, but I'm hoping that there won't be too many distractions, because we got into a great conversation about their new film, The Elephant Queen, which I believe has just been picked up by Apple, which is pretty cool on many levels, because it's going to provide a space and a platform for a lot of people to see it, because it's the kind of film that everybody really needs to see. It's about elephants, of course, but it's about a family of dung beetles. It's about ducks and about wildlife. It's an environmental film. It's a cautionary tale, really, in a way, but it's also finding the extraordinary in the ordinary, the beauty, the connections. It's about conservation. It's about listening. And actually, we're going to find out why it's about a very small tin box that Mark actually lived in for quite a while they were filming. Victoria and Mark filmed this herd of elephants over a 4-year period. It's a film about perspective, and it's you're gonna fall in love with these animals. There is no question, and it's absolutely stunning. The photography is extraordinary. Again, a metaphor, but also something to capture your attention. And you can watch this with the whole family too. So get out and see it, or download it from Apple in the near future. The Elephant Queen coming right up. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing and my speaking, and of course face2facelive.ca for a whole slew of other interviews. We've got a ton of interviews coming up from the Toronto Film Festival this year with some really interesting and engaging filmmakers and actors and producers talking about some pretty brilliant films, and I think there was about 300 of them all in this year. So we didn't do that many interviews, but we did get through about 25 actually. So look forward to those coming up. And if you want to get behind what I'm doing, you can do that on patreon.com, and please, if you get an opportunity, if you can't do that and support me that way, if you wouldn't mind, take a few minutes to put a review on Apple. I sure would appreciate it. Coming right up, Mark Diebel, Victoria Stone, talking about their new film, The Elephant Queen. So welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here today, and we are in the middle of it at the Toronto International Film Festival, standing at a table. We can't even find seats to have this interview. We hope it's the ambient noise isn't going to interrupt too much, but pleasure meeting both of you, Mark Diebel and Victoria Stone, here to talk about their new film, Elephant Queen. Thank you for your time today. Really appreciate you.
Well, it's lovely to come along.
Yeah. And congratulations. What a gorgeous film. What a beautiful statement about so many things. So thank you for that. And welcome to Toronto.
Yeah. Well, thanks. It's lovely to be here.
We're loving being here.
Oh, good. Good. So, oh, wise and gentle soul. Maybe that's a good way into this conversation,
yes,
is it?
Yeah. I mean, I think that came from, you know, we wanted a voice that sort of spoke for the matriarch, who's the Athena is our star of the film. She's a 50-year-old elephant matriarch.
Alongside of a frog, a duck, and a dung beetle?
Yeah, so it does. Yeah. We'd have a whole class of characters that live at toenail height.
She's our
That's right. That's a funny line.
She's our ultimate leading lady.
Sure, sure. Yeah, so, and what I love about what you've done is you made this gorgeous, artful piece, the photography. You live with these animals for about 4 years, I believe. Is that right?
We lived with a small team in the wild for 4 years continuously.
What part of Kenya were you in?
We were in Tsavo East.
Oh, okay. I've actually spent some time in Eldoret many years ago. I've been fortunate enough to get into Kenya, and but it's stunning photography. It's just mind-boggling.
No, I mean, that was, you know, one of the things was we wanted to really immerse ourselves both in the wilderness and in the elephants' lives.
Well, and I think that isn't it true that as filmmakers and storytellers, don't you sort of have to do that?
You do, but there's levels to which you can do it. And if you spend 4 years in the wild, you can really become part of the scenery, so that you're as much an animal as anything else.
Right,
and, you know.
Right.
And I think the nice thing about spending that amount of time is, you know, we always go with the bare bones of the story.
Right.
But then it allows the animals to sort of speak to us as well. So we'll start to see things which we could never have imagined before we started. And, you know, because if we're there for so long, we can respond to them, we can cover them. And if we don't get it all 1 year, hopefully we can get it the next year. Mm. And that's very much the way we approached the Elephant Queen.
But we also, with the filming of it, we wanted to be down at elephant toenail height. So, you know, so you got the perspective of if you were a frog and you were looking up at an elephant. And that involved literally digging down into next to water holes and putting Mark in a metal box and cooking him every day for 12 hours. And then pulling out a sort of exhausted character at the end of the day. But the elephants didn't know he was there, and we got behavior that you could only dream of right down at water level.
There's some remarkable footage of stuff that I would think has almost been captured for the first time.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of things that have been captured.
The sequence with, is it Mimi?
Yes.
That's a profound moment. Yeah. How do you not step back and out of reverence stop photographing it.
I think the thing is, it's one of those things when you're in the moment.
Yes.
You know, you're so busy with thinking, is it in focus? Are we covering it to make a scene?
Have we got the sound?
Is the battery about to go down?
Right.
Are we running out of data storage or something? Yeah. And it's only when you actually pull back later. And I don't want to be too much of a sort of spoiler alert here.
No,
but it's only when you pull back later that you actually realize the full significance of what you've witnessed.
Yeah.
Something that really struck, I mean, this could play as something that a tourism agency would take portions of to push, here, come to Kenya, come and visit. And yet, and maybe will.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure that wasn't your intention going in. There
Absolutely
is a wide
not.
Story to tell. This is a beautiful country. This is remarkable how animals interact. What are the lessons we can learn? What are some of the things that you guys were hoping to take away?
So we wanted to tell a story that would make people fall in love with elephants and that would take them deep into an elephant's world and all the other animals that are basically reliant on or live alongside the elephants. And that the key for us is it's a story. It's an emotional story that takes you through. So you like any story, what's going to happen next?
Right. I have to say, I think I have a profound amount of affection now for the dung beetle that I didn't. I mean, that sequence where I think you even use, I love the music and the sense of humor.
Yes,
is wonderful. Yeah. But it's like a scene out of a Western. Is that
exactly?
Yeah. With the three dung beetles on the bowl, the ball of folks, it's poo basically is what it is. Yeah. And anytime I can use the word poo, I have young kids. It's you got to right.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But also we were trying to we wanted to have fun with it as well as so that
and
it's entertaining.
Do. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we wanted 7-year-old kids to come along and sort of sit there laughing and just. As well as their parents getting a slightly different message, perhaps.
Isn't it something that's so remarkable about things that are just going on every single day, every single moment, that are so profoundly beautiful and extraordinary?
Mm. Yeah.
And we kind of...
Well, you miss them.
Well, we miss them.
Yeah.
You totally
miss
them.
And I think I think that's the great thing about being there for so long is because, you know, when you're in the field like that, when you're living in the bush, You kind of open yourself to everything. You don't have a lot of outside influences coming on. You're not having to shut anything out. You're like a sponge. You know, you soak up everything.
Right.
And when you see these little events happening, they become really significant and important. If we can sort of weave them into the story, then they've instantly got a place.
As writers of film like this, do you have a sense? I mean, a lot of documentarians would say, I kind of have an idea of where I want to go, but I don't really know how it's going to play out. Do you know going in, or 4 years later you say, wow, this is not what we
have a sort of overriding arc of the story,
sure.
But we don't know what we'll film to tell that story. And I mean, we call it a wildlife story.
Mm.
You know, it builds itself, really.
But we knew, for example, that we wanted to show elephants not just as these extraordinary sort of charismatic animals in isolation,
right?
But we wanted to show all the smaller characters, the dung beetles, the chameleons, the butterflies, all these things which somehow revolve in a sort of wheel of life that is centered on an elephant family and the waterhole they live at. And so we knew we wanted the small characters. We didn't know quite which character would step up to the mark. And some do still lie on the editing floor. Dung beetles we knew from the very start.
Name alone.
Exactly.
They have to be a character, right?
Yeah.
I want to know who's going to play the dung beetle in the narrative version of the Elephant Queen. That's what I want to know. Maybe we could spend a bit of time on that. We could whiteboard that. So the there's so much to talk about, and elephants seem to me they have a, and this is anthropomorphism it's extreme, but there's a wisdom that just the facial expressions.
Yes.
You know, Athena's 50, right?
Yeah. And I think the thing is, you can't, if you deny anthropomorphism when it comes to elephants,
right?
You know, you do them a real disservice, because you know the more time you spend with them, the more you realize that they do share so many of the emotions that we do. So I like to think that it's not being anthropomorphic. It's basically just being, we're just being true to the feelings that we see expressed. You know, because once you spend time with them, you can sense intent. You know when they're upset or angry or they're playful. And it's just about trying to get under their skins, that sort of really thick, wrinkly grey skin.
I mean, if you're watching a female with her calf, the way in which she'll use her trunk is exactly like one does with one's hands for one's children.
Right.
You know, whether
it's
protecting, guiding along, comforting. And you cannot help but feel like you're reading in. There's emotion that's like
absolutely off. The sequence in the mud again with the trunk and just moving the calf along and the baby along. I suppose you could say it's profound and beautiful and heartbreaking, and I felt like I wanted to step in and help.
And we do feel that sometimes. And that's always a question as a filmmaker: is at what stage? I mean, are you completely dispassionate, or do you occasionally step in and help? And in that situation, we couldn't. It would have been far more disruptive to the family, and it wouldn't have achieved anything if we tried to step in.
Speaking of stepping in, were there so let's talk about the tin box a little bit. Were there moments where you were where you shouldn't have been?
Mark should tell you what it's like to be in.
The whole idea there was to try and get as close as we could be, still have some sort of sense of protection. So we had these metal boxes welded up. We then dug them into the side of the waterhole, so that the idea was to get right down at toenail level height and then be able to film all the sort of the interactions, but also the elephants as they came down to drink. And we had a slit at the front, and I would go in there every day for days or weeks at a time, for 12 hours a day, seal myself in.
You're looking very thin, by the way. Yes.
and wait, wait for the elephants to come down. And you'd have somebody perhaps on the radio saying, look, hang on, they're coming. And you'd sit there waiting.
I remember interviewing, I can't think of his name right now, John's his first name, a BBC photographer, and he talked about the waiting for that moment, for the fox to appear on the side of a mountain, in the bush, in the snow, and just waiting for that. And to me, the metaphor is almost like listening.
Yeah.
Right?
But everybody always says, oh, you must be so patient.
Right.
But it's not, you don't have to be patient, because you're always watching something interesting, even if it's not what you're actually waiting for.
What's so beautiful about your film is that, and again, that's that what is going on around us.
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of one of the beautiful takeaways of a film?
I think Mark should tell you the story of when he got really hot in the bottom of the box.
Well, when you're in the box for that long time, you've got to do everything in there. You can imagine there's no getting out for 12 hours, and when it got really hot in the middle of the day, I used to, because of the lid got too hot to touch, and that was sort of beating down on my head. I didn't have a lot of hair anyway. So I would take all my clothes off and just curl around the tripod in the base of this tin box, which is probably a meter by a meter by a meter and a half high, and hopefully try and catch a little bit of sleep and wait for the elephants. Well, one day, actually, I dropped off, and I woke. I thought I'd woken myself by my own snoring, but only to find this huge elephant trunk had been sort of inserted into the into the opening of the box and was right in my face, just sniffing away. And I thought, I didn't know what to do. I thought, well, what I don't want to do is scare it.
Yeah, of course.
Because
yeah.
then it might thrash around.
Yeah.
So I'd seen elephant people who look after the elephants at the orphanage in Nairobi. I'd seen them breathe gently into the, you know, when they want to communicate with the elephants, they blow into the end of their trunk. So I did this, I did a little puff, and this whole sort of great sort of snake of a trunk sort of unfurled and sort of came back out of the box. It shook its head and dust rained down, and the earth shook around me, and then off it went.
There's a healthy respect there, I would imagine, between sort of fear and beauty. And I mean,
you're always trying to stay the right side of your reading. It's a bit like with a person. Is it, say you have a confrontation? Right. You're reading a person. You read elephants.
What a beautiful
the same
bit
way.
To the breathing into the trunk. That
I had no idea what else to do, but I thought I'll just give it a
try. That at
just
least.
a little puff, and just hopefully, you know, because elephants are so sensitive. Their sense of smell is extraordinary.
I remember working with a woman in development years ago who, I don't think it was Kenya, but somewhere. Not too far away, on a safari, two tents, wakes up in the morning, and an elephant standing between the two tents. And I remember talking about just being terrified because the elephant wasn't moving, and at what point does it trample, and what if you frighten them? And I mean, they're just such huge, majestic animals. Yeah. A ton, maybe?
I mean, a big bull elephant is 5 or 6 tons.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
You know,
they should spend some time in the tin box.
Yeah. But
there's a few of those
about
pounds.
The delicacy of them.
Yes.
The one thing we were concerned about was if one of them trod on the top of the box, because its weight would have crushed the whole thing. So we put these just very blunt like bolts all over the top.
Oh, okay.
And it was amazing. They never even tried to do it. They could obviously see that was not what they wanted to tread on. And they never even went near the top.
And they stayed away.
Yeah,
it's beautiful. Is this, seems like a really simple, almost trite question, but is this an environmental film?
I think what drives it is you know, we're so passionate about what's happening to elephants. So everything behind it is incredibly, you know, our passion is environmental, you know, conservation passion. And I like to think that it's a film which is not in-your-face environmental, but the idea is that people will come out loving elephants and that then the idea of shooting them buying illegal poached ivory should be totally abhorrent. So the idea is to just engender a respect and a love for elephants, because only if we love things will we actually be moved to do anything about them.
I was going to say, is there anyone who hates elephants? How could you not?
Well, there's obviously people who don't care enough.
I think
people who just
don't care.
Or just see them, or just see them as a means to an end, as a trophy or a consumable.
But also, I think people don't realize how much they need our help. I mean, it could be that in our children or grandchildren's generation, there are no elephants left on this planet in the wild.
And Victoria, this is a particular kind of elephant, right? The longer tusk.
What we tried to do is we really wanted
giant
to...
Giant tuskers, is that what you call
well,
them?
Well, they are. Oh, yeah. I mean, they're genetically the same as ordinary savannah elephants.
Okay.
But these are just elephants which have got huge, huge tusks. And they're found particularly, I mean, Tsavo National Park has one of the remnant populations. And the thing is, they were traditionally the elephants that were targeted by both hunters and obviously poachers. So there are very few left of them left, probably, I don't know, maybe 10, 15, 20 left in the wild. We really wanted to focus our attention on them because they are such magnificent beasts.
We were obviously involved with the death of Sir Tao, who was, you know, the biggest, biggest of them all, and you know, when you realize that you have got a handful left and you lose one, that's serious.
It's a significant. It's not just a blip anymore. Yeah. This is a significant stepping stone towards. We don't really know, I suppose, what the stepping stone is moving towards, but you certainly touch on it. And one of the thoughts, one of the moments I really loved was where you brought out the killifish and the attaching to the legs
and
moving from and you just start to see the circle of life is kind of cliche,
it's cliche for a reason.
It's
what it's all about.
The community of it. The interdependence.
That's what's behind this.
Yeah.
That is if any message comes out of that, it's that whole sort of connection, that connectivity around elephants with everything that depends on them. It's not just other animals. It's the trees, the grasses, and the shrubs whose seeds get spread in the elephant dung. And, we don't want to make a big thing about it because it's not that sort of documentary, but we wanted to show it. And so that if people had that realization for themselves, then that was, they wouldn't be to feel that we'd...
Yeah, I mean, it's a story from that world, just so that you're taken along and into it. We like to kind of see it as a mixture of the circle of life, like it was done in The Lion King, and then Shrek, because some things are really odd.
Right,
and then
right.
The March of the Penguins, because it's an epic, tale from the wild.
Sure.
And it's like bringing all those things together in a way to tell the story.
Do you ever get tired of the beauty?
No.
You can't.
The more time you spend there, the more you get to see. So there's...
Well, you said right out of the gate and at the beginning something about how you're really not waiting, because there's always something.
Exactly. But it's not only the beauty. Beauty is on one level, what we look at.
Sure.
But the beauty, I think, that comes through constantly is the connections between everyone.
Mm.
So there you are living. You're part of what takes the time is looking around you and realizing that one thing has caused another and then weaving that into the story. And it's that level of beauty that I think is actually much more moving than... Obviously, it's beautiful. It's the natural world. It feels unbelievably privileged to be able to live alongside elephants for 4 years. I mean, imagine it. But it is. It's not just the visual beauty. It's the beauty of how those systems are working without anything to do with man.
As filmmakers, are you trusting and hoping that people will watch a film like this in the drive home, the conversation, students who write essays about it and so on, that there will be unexpected outcomes.
Totally.
It's about conversation.
Conservation,
it's about the dialogue, et cetera.
We've put 8 years of our lives into
this.
Wow, and it's because of the whole ethos of the film and the what it seems, it's like a snowball, it's growing and people keep sticking to it because they want to be part of...
Right.
I think people want to care. They want to, they can't believe what's going on.
I think also the excitement for us now is having Apple on board as a partner.
Oh, that's fantastic. I didn't know.
That's
great.
Okay,
great.
So basically Apple have bought the
Can I
the
benefit
global,
from any of that sponsorship money by any
films.
Chance for face-to-face? Is that a possibility? Yeah, can we partner in some way?
Definitely.
That's
so,
amazing.
So the great thing is, they are such a big global brand that would really get the message out.
Yeah.
And we're thrilled.
Sadly, we've got to wrap up in a couple of minutes here.
You always said the best stuff will come at the end.
I know. Isn't it ridiculous? It's just, and I always joke.
You know it too well.
I've done a few part two on FaceTime. I'm getting close to about 400 interviews, and I've done a few part two, but this is one I'd love to pick up with you down the road if we can. But you near the end of the film, and it's certainly, I would say, a connecting thread throughout is this sense of water and life-giving, and it's connected to everything.
Mm.
The life and the death and the ongoing and the maintenance of the community and so on. But you say only one way to balance the kingdom. And it's just such a beautiful line. There's so many of them in the film, but it just made me smile for, the idealism of it one hand, that hopeful idealism. Yeah. And then, what is it that we need with respect to elephants and other communities and extreme poverty and gender disparity and all these things, how are we going to balance it?
Yeah. I mean, you take that aim and you take it to every area of life. It's relevant, isn't it?
It absolutely
and
is.
Holding it there as a goal.
Are you hopeful idealists?
I think living in the wild like that, where you can remove yourself slightly from from everything else, you have the space to dream.
Right.
And
nice.
I think that we probably are.
So just as we wrap up, Apple, is there a campaign that's going to be connected in? Is there?
We only did the deal yesterday.
Right.
It was
amazing?
That's why we're a little bleary-eyed.
Yes, the bottle of champagne is still open in the hotel room, no doubt. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
So there could be a social sort of change kind of campaign.
I think the thing is Apple a great partners.
Yes,
they've got that whole sort of family feel and that behind. Right.
And humanity is so the core of what they do.
Well, let's hope that there's going to be something that's going to be engaging and relevant, and it's not just going to get you petitionary signatures, but people are going to actually be convicted.
That's the whole point of this film, is to reach people who don't even know at the moment they love elephants. You know, we know there's a cohort who are doing all they can for them, but there's a huge number of people out there who I don't think they know yet.
That's such a great line. Isn't that beautiful? It's already there.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Last question. What's next for you both?
I mean, the thing is, elephants have bitten us.
Could it have been another animal?
No, not this film. I mean, we've spent 30 years filming in Africa, and I don't think there's any other film that we've finished and thought we haven't finished. Because they're endlessly intriguing. Right. You can't quite understand. You want to know more.
I mean, even after living with them for 4 years and filming, we feel we've only just
scratched the surface. Yes. Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Well, there's your next film, perhaps.
Thank
you so much today, talking to Victoria Stone and Mark Diebel about their new film, Elephant Queen. You need to go and see it here at the Toronto International Film Festival, and hopefully going to be a theatrical release.
It's absolutely.
Stay tuned for the film.
Theatrical release with Apple.
Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.